Voices on Climate Justice. Audio reports on struggles for environmental justice. Interviews produced for broadcast on campus community radio stations globally, featuring voices from around the world engaged in frontline environmental struggles and key activists in international campaigns for climate justice. In this report, we will hear from Patrick Bond of the Center for Civil Society at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in Durban, South Africa. Focused on the current mobilization in South Africa and globally against the upcoming UN Climate Summit to take place in Durban, South Africa between November 28th and December 9th, 2011. Activists are converging on the UN Climate Summit after the widely perceived failure of the COP15 conference in Copenhagen in addressing the roots of the global climate crisis. In this interview, Patrick Bond details the mobilization efforts in South Africa led by communities directly impacted by climate change, both in Durban and globally. So we're in Montreal. This is Cochabamba Plus One. Can you maybe just first introduce yourself briefly and speak about the main points that you were highlighting about the current mobilization in Durban?
Yes, I'm Patrick Bond, and I'm an academic by sort of profession working in the Center for Civil Society at University of KwaZulu-Natal. I was trained in political economy and political ecology. My PhD supervisor, David Harvey, is known as a strong kind of Marxist and social theorist and internationalist. So I was well trained, I think, to think about these big events in a big, long historical perspective. And they are terribly important when you put, say, a Durban climate summit in November, December, in context of a lot of failed global projects. So one of the things we always have to do is reality check and ask whether the group that's going to come, including the Canadian government, has any interest or capacity to solve this huge problem, given the terribly adverse balance of forces. Not just that it's a Tory government with a lot of climate denialism and is kind of following the lead of the United States that's just absolutely, you know, sort of gridlocked in legislative terms, and is so heavily influenced by projects like tar sands and shale gas and all the rest. But actually, there's a bigger problem, I think, Stefan, that the world elites, since meeting in this city, I think really in 1987 in the Montreal Protocol, that dealt with chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, that are increasing the size of the ozone hole. And so having finally at that point said, okay, we'll put a cap on that and prevent these CFCs, starting in 1996, they were banned. That was really the last time, I think, that these global elites have done anything to solve a global problem properly. And the major challenges of the period since, the neoliberalism and neoconservatism ideologically that have come up in the 90s and 2000s, the attempts to change the Bretton Woods institutions, you know, the World Bank, the IMF, pretty much no change there. World Trade Organization is, you know, in a cul-de-sac, so it's going nowhere. The UN Security Council and United Nations processes are stuck, and aid is not flowing. And you come to geopolitics and the wars that are still raging in Central Asia and the Middle East and now North Africa. You know, these are big, big problems that these elites have no capacity to deal with. And the climate is just the latest in that. And since Kyoto, where they had a ridiculous idea to solve the problem with the market, with the carbon trading, and they had very limited objectives, 5% cuts by 2012 from 1990 levels, we really have seen our world elites just absolutely fail to come properly to any of these tables and solve the problems. So let's say Durban will be a continuation. Copenhagen was more of a disaster for them for public relations reasons. And then in Cancun, they were able to pretend that they are back on track, as we know they sort of are building a castle in the sky of market solutions and on quicksand. The markets are actually absolutely failing. The European carbon market was absolutely stymied by hacking and theft, you know, a couple of 3 months ago was actually shut down. And the U.S. has gone nowhere. California might get up and running, but there's a lawsuit that just was filed by environmental justice activists in San Francisco to stop that. And nowhere else really can we find, I mean, Montreal's a pathetic little market. There's nothing really going on to give any sense that the biggest problem we'll ever face, I think, the climate problem in our lifetimes is going to be solved through their ideal solution, a carbon market. And it's such a tragedy, I must just say, that the Greens and the other, the NDP and the, you know, all of the opposition parties in this country are all for carbon trading. It's absurd. It just makes one think that what we'd normally expect from sort of rational middle-class Canadian elites, you know, with leadership like Stephen Lewis used to provide on the AIDS battle, is actually not there. They're definitely Canadians part of the problem. And that maybe brings me to Durban, because I think if Canadians mm-hmm. come with Washington, with Obama's people and the World Bank and the EU, you know, Connie Hedegaard's obviously shown as a Danish leader she can't do anything on climate, and then the Japanese and the Russians have just said they're pulling out of Kyoto. We're really looking at the major bloc of northern negotiators totally sabotaging any possibility. And that in turn means for activists a pretty easy argument that these guys just shouldn't come. You know, if there's going to be a conference of the party 17, COP 17, and the Canadians come and the Yankees and the Russians and the Japanese and the Europeans, well, it'll just be a conference of polluters. It's not going to actually solve the problem. So one of the arguments then, and I think we were getting a sense of this in the World Social Forum when we last talked, is that the Canadian government should stay home, and the Canadian people who care about the climate have a responsibility to begin to ask, well, what are these delegates doing in our name? And there's certainly enough evidence from the Bangkok preparatory meeting in early April, and there will be in the June meeting in Bonn, that Canadian delegates are absolutely saboteurs and just shouldn't be allowed to come to Durban. And that might mean people using the old spirit of Mahatma Gandhi and sit-ins and satyagraha and sort of civil disobedience to prevent that. And I think that's going to be the kind of message that's going to reverberate around the world.
When we look towards Durban, beyond that to Rio plus 20, one critique that has been very strong is coming out of the Cochabamba process, which is around looking at environment in terms of market. You talked about carbon markets, but generally around the commodification of the natural world and looking at solutions based in market ideology and economics, solutions for the climate catastrophe we're facing. So I'm wondering, in that kind of realm of discussion, how is that critique playing out on the ground in Durban? Like, for example, within organizations like, I think it's the South Durban Community Alliance, organizations on the ground, are they looking to protest the UN Climate Summit in Durban from that kind of critique, that vantage point of the market-driven orientation around addressing climate?
Yes, absolutely, Stefan. That's one of the nicest things about working in South Africa. I've lived in South Africa 20 years, and it's always been ideologically a very clear site where an understanding that racial apartheid segued into class apartheid, because the balance of forces meant there was a deal, and the deal wasn't just giving, you know, the white Afrikaner some additional privileges to ease them out of power, but actually easing in sub-imperial functions and neoliberal public policy. So I think you'll find, as more and more South Africans and their issues, you know, AIDS medicines or water privatization or electricity prices or you know, GM foods, as these issues are more and more connected to the kind of struggles fought by progressives in Canada, there's a similar sense of anti-neoliberalism. Don't forget that in 2002, the Johannesburg World Summit on Sustainable Development was actually the introduction to for many of us to the payment for environmental services, PES. We're going to hear more about that PES, payment for environmental services. So the privatization of water. They were public-private partnerships and type 2 partnerships, and the UN had, through its UNDP, all kinds of water privatization with the World Water Council. We were really helped, I must say, by people like Tony Clark and Maud Barlow and the Naomi Klein and the people who'd been from Cochabamba to really assist in helping South Africans understand the extent. But from Soweto in Johannesburg, already a big struggle by 2002. And I might just add that from what I've picked up, the Rio plus 20, in other words, back in Rio, the next Earth Summit in 2012, will indeed be codification of a lot of that market ideology and the phrases the green economy. And of course, the green economy is something we'd like to see from the left, namely some genuine concern about environmental processes as we restructure towards some sort of eco-socialist economy. For the capitalists, though, it means the green economy could be all the kinds of false solutions and, you know, geoengineering and carbon markets and anything to make a profit from the economy and from sort of environmental investments, no matter if they're absolute Frankenstein sort of things or not, genetic modified biofuel, you know, projects. All of that is part of what they want to do with the green economy. So that's what they'll bring to Rio Plus 20. And what I think we did at Rio Plus 10, that is the World Summit on Sustainable Development in Johannesburg, really put on notice the UN bureaucracy that they weren't going to get a pass from the big spirit of global justice that was at its peak from the Seattle protest of December 99 and, of course, Quebec City in 2001. We pulled, I think, in August 2002, our biggest progressive march since the end of apartheid, 30,000 people marching against the United Nations from Alexandra Township right into the heart of Johannesburg's new central business district of Sandton. And it was a tremendous event to show ideologically that South Africans had the capacity to host the progressives from all around the world. Let's see if that can be repeated in November. I'll just flash back to one other incident, which was 10 years before the upcoming Durban COP, and that's the Durban World Conference Against Racism of 2001. Canadians will remember that because there were so many great people who visited who were part and parcel of First Nations and were part of the reparations movement demanding that slavery and colonialism and apartheid be compensated by those who profited, and also that Zionists be called to account and that Zionism as racism be put back onto the agenda of the UN. We failed to persuade the elites, one of whom, the chair, Mary Robinson, is now very involved in climate, which is very unreliable on that front. Of course, at that point, Kofi Annan was under the thumb of Colin Powell, and the U.S. delegation was just quickly walked out with the Israelis. But it meant that we had about 15,000 people protesting against the World Conference Against Racism on grounds in Durban that they were unable to come to grips with Zionism and with reparations. And that's the spirit, I think, in Durban, where we had two really great leaders of our movement, Dennis Brutus and Fatima Mir, both of whom have passed away in the last year and a half, but their spirit and their strength and wisdom are still with us. And I do think that the debate now in Durban that I've just come from, in fact, is the extent to which we can build a big united movement to link the traditional, maybe centrist NGOs that do work on environment, like WWF and some of those groups in the Climate Action Network, which is more the establishment insider negotiating, who are often in favor of carbon trading and market sort of supposed solutions on the one hand, and with the CJ, the climate justice movements of South Africa. We have a climate justice now in South Africa that's disparate, has in the three different big cities, Durban, the second biggest, Joburg, the biggest, Cape Town, third, very strong activists, probably about 25, 30 in each, that have built up different projects and different protests that suggest we can probably host something quite useful if we put all of our efforts together, including on December 3rd, a big march, sort of a united march with, you know, unifying demands. And that means that our alternative summit space, which we anticipate, it's not 100%, but I anticipate it will be at the Durban University of Technology, whose chancellor, incidentally, is actually the granddaughter of Mahatma Gandhi, her name Ella Gandhi. And as we speak today, she just held a salt march with several thousand people, sort of recreating that spirit of Gandhi. And I think that's such a Graha center that she has, and the spirit there of commitment to civil disobedience, we'll see some evidence of then in Durban. And I think that's going to be a really good space. It's much closer to the ICC, the International Conference Center, the Convention Center, than some of the other venues. And as a result, we'll probably get also a lot of flow through of ordinary people from Durban. It's a very right next to the big transport center. And I think actually it'll be a terrific space for a week and a half or two, starting in November 28th. There may be some other, you know, big teach-ins, and of course we're doing climate camps leading up to that. So I do expect a good alternative summit space. It might be called a climate indaba. I think Klima Forum is a sort of spirit from Copenhagen's effort, but we'll have a South African name in Daba, I suspect. And I think that'll be an all-in kind of thing, and the public certainly very open, and maybe some good debates between the different ideological positions while we get ourselves educated about what it is. My own hope is climate justice comes out very strongly and with a very strong militant march, and it may be a march. I think we should certainly march away from this International Convention Center, where I don't think anything useful will happen, and in disgust basically say this is the elites failing yet again. We've actually now got to do something more serious. More serious climate politics means we have to go to the sites of huge emissions, and in Durban that's going to be the big petrochemical complex, the biggest set of oil refineries south of the Niger Delta, plus the airport, plus, you know, the dozens of other sites of potential. We have, for example, a big clean development mechanism. And virtually all the people that are part of that hosting committee, a group called the C17, 17 people from different organizations, I think are going to be very strongly on board for finding sites where we really put our bodies on the line and say that, like we've seen in Alberta and with the tar sands, and in Quebec with the fights against shale gas, we really need the grassroots to take the lead, because the world elites are making a terrible mess.
You've been listening to an interview with Patrick Bond from the Center for Civil Society at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in Durban, South Africa. For more information on the South Africa mobilization toward the Durban UN Climate Summit, visit www.climate-justice-now.org. That's www.climate-justice-now.org. This interview was recorded and produced for the Voices on Climate Justice series, for broadcast on campus community radio stations globally by Stefan Christoph. Music for this series provided by DJ Moonstar of Public Transit Records, Canada.